Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. My name is Michael Gray and I'm excited tonight because we have a special guest with us tonight. I'd like to welcome Jen Colmore, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California. Welcome, Jen.
Hey, Michael. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Great. Great to have you on the air again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking it was a few months ago or perhaps over the summer when you were on the air with us.
Yeah, it was. I remember it distinctly because it was at the very end of our last month-long retreat. So that
was
in early December.
Early December.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. And I'm sure a lot has happened since then.
A lot has happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Great. Jen, let me give you a couple heads up. We have a couple callers on hold here.
Okay.
I thought I would mention a couple things from the schedule.
Yeah, great.
And then go to the callers. And then, as some of our listeners know, perhaps all of them know, you're very involved in the Africa work.
Yep.
And if people want to call and ask about that, they would be welcome to do that also.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, great. A couple items from the very long, exciting Living Compassion calendar.
Yeah.
Which people can find on the web at livingcompassion.org. So there are many things there. I just wanted to mention a couple.
Okay.
There's a weekend retreat coming up with Sherry in Felton, which is not too far from Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
That's near the end of April.
Yep.
And then further back east, there's a retreat with Sherry and the monks in North Carolina.
Yeah, a week-long retreat.
Week-long retreat, which is also going to be end of April, early May.
Yep.
Let's see. Oh, yeah, and a retreat with Sherry and the monks in Pittsburgh.
Yep, which is, I think that's sort of a long weekend-ish retreat.
Yeah, long weekend-ish,
mm-hmm.
End of May. And also in there, a couple of There's Nothing Wrong With You retreats.
Yeah, here at the monastery. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
We just finished one of those retreats last week. It's an extraordinary experience for everyone, people who come, and those of us who get to participate in them here at the monastery.
Great. Great. That was my experience as well.
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to say about that experience?
No, just that, you know, I think what I always end up, I hear myself say during that retreat at some point that, you know, all of practice is such a gift, you know, to us. We, people who do practice really get it, that it becomes kind of the core of their life. It becomes how they live their life. And it feels like the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat is the retreat that in particular teaches the skill, kind of the how of doing that. So it really, on a very concrete level, it kind of teaches the tools. It gives us the tools to be able to bring awareness practice into all of our life.
So that retreat in particular is the one that teaches us the tools for kind of the fundamentals of awareness practice and sort of the detailed things that we can do to bring awareness into our lives.
Yeah, exactly. We often encourage people to come on that retreat as a kind of, we don't like to say it as a beginning point because then people feel like they're beginners, but of course in Zen that's a good thing. Beginner's mind is what we're going for.
Yes.
You know, the foundation. Often people who come on a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat end up coming again and again to it, you know, returning to it as a, you know, shoring up the foundation of their practice.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that as well.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to talk to some callers?
Let's do it.
Okay, great. I'd like to welcome Christina from San Francisco. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Jen. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Christina.
Hi, Sangha. It's so funny because I just got back from the monastery.
You were on that very retreat, weren't you?
Yes, I was. So if anyone's listening and they're thinking about it, yes.
Yep.
Thumbs up. So I got home, and I feel like I'm more sane or grounded in reality than I've ever been.
Mm.
And then I have periods of total craziness, just mm-hmm. real crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then to add an interesting twist, and I don't have access to the feelings right now, one of my animals died the day after I got home.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And I don't feel it now, but I have nothing really to say about it. It's been a really good practice opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, what a hard thing to have happen.
Uh-huh.
Of course, right after you return home from a retreat, and it's such a time that you almost have no choice but to turn to compassion.
Mm-hmm.
But to call on that skill, that tool that you just learned so much about in the previous week.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's interesting because I'm not obsessed at all, which has always been my experience when I call into the radio show, because my ego's like, oh, we're fine. No problems here. But I'm most tempted to go down, and what I have not allowed myself to do or allowed my thoughts to do, to go and review the last 3 weeks of her health and try to figure out that one thing that I could have done
mm-hmm.
so that I can find, I feel like there's almost like a visceral yep. thing I like to do to myself, or self-hate likes to do to me,
mm-hmm.
of finding something that's pretty convincing
yep.
so that I can just have this part in my body or my mind, I just can't touch that black hole. Like, I'll find out whatever such and such I should have
yep.
done, and then I can always sort of have a black hole. And
yep.
and I'm happy to report that I've been pretty successful in not indulging any reviewing of
yes.
what I could have done.
Good for you. That's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, because, it really is.
You know, conditioning is scanning. Scanning for that one thing.
Yeah.
And what it wants you to do is to engage in that scanning process. So it's doing that, and it's going, you know, Christina, over here, let's look. Well, let's just see. Look, what? Maybe there was one little...
There must have been something.
And it's almost an addiction, isn't it?
Yeah, but it feels compelling.
Feels compelling. And so the courage to not do that is huge, and that's the whole thing, because to not turn your attention to that scanning, to not collude with that process, is choosing Christina. It's choosing freedom over conditioned mind.
Yeah. Oy. Yeah. I don't feel anything now. I'm just kind of spaced out. And I have a little bit of content about it because I'm still holding on to her body.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to bury it real soon.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've had this pretty strong obsession with where to bury her and how to do it perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, which is another version of that scanning, isn't it?
Yeah, because the story under it is, if I do it right,
yeah.
then somehow her spirit or something will still be with me, or her body, or,
yeah.
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 Uh-huh.
And it's the classic, you know, what do I want for her? Well, we can guess something along the lines of unconditional love, compassion, acceptance. What's the only way I'm going to be able to offer that to her?
Mm-hmm.
To offer that to myself first.
Yeah, I still can't budge it. I've got a pretty big perfectionism. There must be something, but
Yeah, well, and to see that as the same, it's just a slightly different relationship you're having with it than the process of scanning for that health, right?
Right.
So in the last 3 weeks of health and that scanning, for whatever reason, that's familiar enough to you that you have the willingness to drop that and not get into it.
Yes.
Whereas this has some more level of believability, so there's some sense of, well, yeah, that must kind of be true on some level. I better pay attention to that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah, maybe because bodies are pretty big deal still, and, yeah. and it's still here. So it's like, mm-hmm. oh, but this is a body. Like, I don't know, unfamiliar turf, what to do. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so just practicing not, practicing
being, you know, we say it all the time, but practicing being back here, because what you want is to be able to be available to her, right? And when you're in that conversation about, well, how should I bury her, and what would be just quite the right thing, and you're not available.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and back to trusting that I will, there's a way to make a choice, if that's even what it is, there's a way to do that without solving the obsessive debate.
Yes.
I forgot that part. I totally did.
Yes.
So there is a way, it's not even like a decision, but there's a way to make a decision.
Yeah.
There's a way to make a decision without without doing this.
Yeah. In fact, you could even take it one step farther and say, there isn't a way to make that decision through the obsessing process.
There isn't.
There is not. In the process of kind of that back and forth conversation in conditioned mind, there is not a way to get to clarity. That's pretty much a guarantee not to have clarity.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Good luck. You'll let us know, huh?
Thank you. Yes, right. I will. Thank you.
Take care, Christina.
You too. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Christina. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Tonight we have a special guest. Jen Colmore is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Jen, let me just give out that phone number before we go to our next caller. Phone lines are open here, toll-free in North America, the U.S. and Canada. Number is 866-613-1612. Again, that's 866-613-1612. It's always fun to be in the conversation, in my experience, mm-hmm. and we welcome callers.
Yep, great.
Okay, we have our next caller. I'd like to welcome Sandy from New York. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Jan.
Hi.
I want to thank you for being there. I have two considerations, and the very first one is a thank you. You had just shared with the previous caller that you wanted her to call back and let you know how things went.
Yeah.
And so I'm calling from a situation I called about 18 months ago. It was shortly after I had returned back from the There's Nothing Wrong With You in Murphy's. That was amazing,
right.
Life-changing event. And it was very distressing. My husband had a heart attack, and it was very scary, and we're reaching retirement age, and things were very quickly changing, and I was feeling a lot of things once it was clear that he was going to get well again. I was feeling some things I wasn't very proud about, feeling like anger toward him, and, you know, things just weren't looking as rosy, and I had all these expectations, and so I called, and I talked to Dave, complained, and I wanted to call back now 18 months later. My husband and I are both 40 pounds lighter.
Wow.
Tons healthier and happier. He's fully recovered. He has a brand new job. I'm retiring from my teaching job of 35 years. We're moving to a lovely place in Florida in June, and life couldn't be better. And so I have on my email, my away message says, be open to the possibilities.
Yeah, really. You're a poster child for that.
That's what Dave said to me.
Uh-huh.
Now he just said, you know, give compassion to the woman whose expectations have been changed, but, you know, could you be open to possibilities?
Yeah.
At the time, I wasn't sure I could, Jen, but gee whiz, look.
Yeah, right. And what would you say, Sandy, that kind of facilitated all of that?
Being open to the possibilities?
Uh-huh.
Is that what you mean, Jen?
Yeah, that it sounds like when you called into the radio show 18 months ago, you were in a place of, this is so much, I don't know, you know, and then the suggestion was made, be open to possibility, and it sounds like even at that time there was a sense of, I don't know if I really can do that, but something clearly shifted dramatically.
I think it was, I recall one of the conversations when I was there in one of the workshops, and somebody said, well, you know, when do you know when it's time to end the suffering? And the facilitator said, just when you've suffered enough.
Yeah.
And I think the shift came, Jen, when I had suffered enough. The voices were screaming at me, and they were screaming at my husband, and they were, you know, it was just absolutely dreadful. And so there came a time when I thought, I can't listen to these voices anymore. And my option was to call the radio show and to talk, and there it was, be open to the possibilities, and that was a whole lot better than listening to what the voices were saying to me.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the word that keeps coming up for me is willingness. You had the willingness to be open to the possibility, the willingness to see that there could be another way.
Yeah, well, that may be the issue, then, that I would like to talk about tonight.
Uh-huh.
Because even though that particular instance is gone from 18 months ago, mm-hmm. I'm dealing with another one. This one has to do, again, with retirement and with leaving the area. And I have a 70-year-old mom, mm-hmm. and she's becoming a bit more needy. And because I'm leaving the area, I'm noticing that the voices are telling me that I need to feel guilty about leaving her, although my husband and I have asked her to join us. She doesn't want to make a move.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some really dreadful history with this woman. She wasn't a very nurturing mom. In fact, I often say that she taught me everything that I learned about mothering, because I do what she never did for me.
Uh-huh.
And she was an alcoholic and, like I said, not the least bit nurturing. And so the voices are there all the time to tell me how horrible she was to me, and how I am this poor little girl when I get in her presence that was hurt and angry and didn't have what I needed, and she's the person who deprived me of it. So the voices are just coming at me from all different directions, and I know that I am being kind to her,
mm-hmm.
and I know that I'm making important decisions. I'm now paying her bills on the internet, and
mm-hmm.
I've just taken over the selling of her vehicle and making arrangements for transportation for her and different things like that. So I know that I'm making intelligent in my head decisions,
mm-hmm.
but in my heart, the voices are saying dreadful things that I'm embarrassed to hear.
Mm-hmm.
There are things like, she doesn't deserve this kindness.
Right.
You know, you had to take care of yourself when you were only 4 and 5 years old,
mm.
and she's 79.
Mm.
She probably's got a better shot at taking care of herself.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, Jen, I'm really beating myself up badly and having a really tough time with it.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, you said something really interesting a little bit ago when you were talking about when it got to a difficult spot with the other situation in your life, and that you said the voices were really at you, and you said the voices were really at your husband. And that's a really, that's a pretty subtle point that people often miss, because at some point we catch on that there's self-hate inside of our head and that self-hate is beating us up. We don't often realize that it's also self-hate that's doing that to other people. So in that case, you know, when you were, you know, having difficult interactions, let's say, with your husband, to realize that that's not you, that also is self-hate.
Yeah.
And so kind of the same thing applies here, doesn't it?
Yeah, I see that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So those voices that are telling me how unkind I am to even harbor those thoughts inside my head, are really my own self-hate directed toward my mom.
Right, right. And they've got you coming and going. So it's
They do.
It's the, you know, she doesn't deserve this. She wasn't, ha, ha, ha. So, and then the very same voice is saying, you know, look at you. I can't believe you think these things about your own mother.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I'm getting a double whammy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And, you know, it just strikes me as no surprise, because to have the kind of, we are back to willingness, really, aren't we? To have the kind of willingness that you're talking about to care for someone in her elder years who, as you say, was not able to really be there for you as a young person in the way you would have liked her to be, is an extraordinary act of kindness and compassion. And what that has the potential to facilitate inside of you, kind of what to open that, how much that has the potential to open you, to be able to offer something to someone who wasn't at a time able to offer that same thing to you. What an amazing experience that could be, and no wonder that self-hate would have a lot invested in not wanting you to go down that road.
I almost wanted to interrupt you when you were saying that, and then as you finished your sentence, I thought, oh, good heaven, because I wanted to say to you when you said it was an extraordinary act of kindness that I was caring for my mother at this point, I wanted to tell you, no, it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the self-hate ruining the fact that I am caring for my mother, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Duh.
Yeah, I mean, really. You know, okay, yeah, well, I'm doing this and I'm doing that, but I'm not, right? I mean, it's always trying to undercut it.
That's I'm doing it, but it's not because she deserves it. I'm doing it, but it's not because I really want to. It's
right.
Because I should.
Right. Wow. Yeah.
So where does my willingness come in? Willingness to accept that I could be kind to her?
Sounds like your willingness is already in full force. I mean, the willingness to, I imagine there are days when you don't feel like taking on the selling of her car.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there, right there is a great deal of willingness. The willingness to see this whole thing in the context of your awareness practice and not just believe the voices and have them kind of dictate how the situation is going to go. I mean, those are the pieces, aren't they?
Yeah. See, I feel better already, Jen.
That's a nice side benefit of awareness practice, isn't it?
It is a lovely side benefit of awareness practice. I on a parting note, have to tell you that I had decided last week that I needed to call because I've really been fighting with the voices. And so I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll call the radio show there. Oh, it's such a help. And on Tuesday morning, I woke up with laryngitis.
Oh, my goodness.
I wasn't able to go to work. I teach first grade, and if you can't talk, you really can't work with 6-year-olds.
No, you can't.
And
yep.
So I stayed home, and I nursed my voice all day, fully intending to call. And as it got to be 9:05 here on the East Coast,
uh-huh.
I came to the telephone. I brought up the telephone number. I called just in time for the gal to say, well, there are only 5 minutes left.
Oh,
I said, but the show starts at 9, and she said, well, actually, it started at 8.
Oh, no.
And I thought, wow, if that wasn't interesting.
Yeah, really.
So I had this physical thing going on, and then I totally missed the time of the show. And
well, then how huge for you to say, okay, that's all right, I'm calling in next time.
Well, I have an amazing daughter who's in awareness practice, and so I called her.
Oh, great. Yeah.
It is wonderful to have that kind of sangha.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it?
Jen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandy.
Take care.
Take good care.
Thanks for joining us, Sandy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Tonight, we're privileged to have a special guest with us. Jen Colmore is a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy, California. Jen, I really appreciated that call.
Yeah, that was, it's very fun to hear people report back, isn't it?
Yes. And I particularly like the piece about self-hate will be telling me, you know, how awful I am or how I'm doing nothing with my life or some version of its usual story. And then I pause and I look at what I am actually doing with my life.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of people would not reach that conclusion looking at my life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Really, really important, you know, just to have that, to have that reality check.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, and it was so helpful when you, you know, provided that.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give out the phone number again. Toll-free in North America, that's U.S. and Canada. You can reach us here today, 866-613-1612. Jen, we're going to take a break now.
Okay.
And then we have another caller after the break.
Great.
Welcome back to Open Air. Tonight we have Jen Colmore with us as our special guest. Jen, we have another caller.
Great.
I'd like to welcome Kristen from California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hi.
Hi, Kristen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I've been practicing for about a year and a half or so, and my my sitting practice is a little sporadic. It's it's not as good as my listening to the radio show practice.
Very good.
I'm part of the practice, but getting to do more of it, seeing that it really helps. The sitting practice really helps.
Yeah.
And but what I want to talk about today is that I've noticed. Recently, in the past couple of months, several months, that I feel like I'm kind of, I don't know, I feel kind of weird saying this, but like there's certain types of relationships that aren't really working for me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm sort of naturally kind of going away from those.
Uh-huh.
And also I'm really enjoying spending time on my own and being able to have fun and do things and take care of myself, and
yeah.
And that's been really great. But I don't want to be like isolating myself,
right.
I guess.
Right. If you were to say, you said that there are certain types of relationships that you seem to be moving away from, what would be a short description of that?
People who have been in my life who say things that aren't helpful,
mm-hmm.
and who I hear a lot of judgment from,
mm-hmm.
people who complain a lot,
mm-hmm.
And I recognize that it's a projection,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't work for me to be around it. And what I imagine that I want is to be around people who are interested in life, and I feel like there's so many things that I'm just interested in.
Yeah.
That I could
yeah.
just sit and talk to people about
mm-hmm.
all day long. I have nothing to do with me or my job or my relationships right. or anything like that.
Right. Yeah. Kind of an interest in the world.
And it, yeah, yeah.
In life.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess it's like those kinds of people that so anyway, I don't know. Maybe it's just the transition.
Right. So then it sounds like, in a sense, feeling that, kind of just transitioning away from those kinds of relationships, but then sort of wondering, gosh, am I isolating by doing that?
Right. Like maybe I'll never be able to be friends with anybody again or
right.
have anyone in my life or
yeah.
I don't know, you know.
Well, the way you describe it, there are people that you continue to enjoy spending time with.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There are, I mean, I'm meeting new people,
mm-hmm.
and that's really cool. But there's so, I guess it's a transition phase because there's no one that there's no one that currently lives where I live that I feel, you know, I could share those things with that I've
mm-hmm.
known for a while,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I'm meeting new people who are sort of more interested in stuff, I think.
Yeah.
I think I am. But then I worry that, oh, they're, you know, I'm going to turn out to be critical of them. You know, I'm going to turn out to go, oh, well, no, they aren't living up to this new, like, ideal I have
right.
in my head about the type of people that I want to be around or something.
Right, right. So almost it sounds like a worry that I will do the very process I'm projecting onto them. That kind of, as you said, that feeling judgment coming from them and...
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there are a couple things that occur to me around it. One is, I'm sure if you've listened to the radio show and or read any of Sherry's books, you've heard her say the quality of our life is focused by how our attention is focused.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at, you know, that's true internally, you know, what we're focusing our attention on is determining the quality of our life, right? So if we talked about this with the last caller, if we're listening to the voices in our head, then the quality of our life is one thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Often... judgment, misery, you know, all of this. If our attention is here in the moment, that's a whole different life experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way you describe it, it would be natural that as you do awareness practice, that you would be drawn to having your attention be here in the moment and not so drawn to spending time with people whose attention is not here in the moment.
Uh-huh.
Is that...
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So there's that. That seems like kind of a natural movement. And then there's a place where that it seems like you're looking at of, then does that become a kind of a standard that I have to live my life by, if you will? So does it become where, now I just can't be around people who are,
right.
Or I can't be in situations that make me feel such and such.
Right.
And that begins to close your world back down, doesn't it?
Yes.
So there's a place in there where, you know, yes, we tend to be drawn to people who are, you know, let's say we're doing awareness practice, we're going to be drawn to other people who are also drawn in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Other people who also value, you know, having their attention in the moment and enjoying life and, you know, all those things you describe.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also practicing being okay with whatever is.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that just might be an interesting place for you to practice with. That place of just watching how you're not so drawn to seek out people like that.
Right.
And, excuse me, I'm a little hoarse. And if you do find yourself in a situation with someone like that, that you're projecting those things onto, what is that like?
Right.
You know, what do I see in that?
Right. Yeah, I that makes sense. I guess I just worry that, you know, I mean, that's okay, like, I can be with those people if they happen to show up, you know.
Right, uh-huh.
But, like, what about, like, do I have to find people now who are doing awareness practice? I mean, there's not that many people who are doing awareness practice.
Yeah.
Maybe there are in the city, but, you know.
There are what?
Maybe, I mean, I don't live, like, in a metropolitan area.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny because in my experience, it's true, you know, the percent of people, let's say, who are doing awareness practice might be very small, and yet there are all kinds of people who might not say they're doing awareness practice who still live their life in the present, in a sense.
Uh-huh.
You know? I mean, have you ever been, I mean, children, for example.
Yeah.
That would be one really good example. You know, it's really fun to spend time around children because, in general, especially when they're very young, they're not going to get caught up in, you know, oh, can you believe what she said about him? And
right, and I'm finding that, too, with kids that I know.
Yeah.
That I'm really liking spending time with them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because they're models of what you're practicing.
And because it makes me feel like I'm in the moment.
Yes.
It brings me to the moment. It
yes.
makes me not have to worry about it.
Yes. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So in my experience in that same way, you know, it's not a matter of going out to find the people who, you know, go, you know, whatever, have the same practice I have or read the same books I read but more just kind of who are the people I'm drawn to in that way. It's almost like in a sense your heart guides you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
People who are modeling that for you, who are sharing that experience with you.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, I think I haven't really, it's pretty new.
Yeah.
You know? And the whole thing of letting these relationships go is pretty new.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something I ever said, okay, I'm going to stop seeing these people.
Right.
Or anything. It
was just it's just kind of been a...
Something that's
happened as a course. Yeah.
Yeah,
and, you know, there's a place, too, where family members, for example, you know, there's a place where I can practice, I can be in the moment to the best of my ability and spend time, say, with family members but who aren't necessarily prone in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And what's it like for me to include that experience of being with them in practice?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, you said you love spending time around little kids because they're in the moment. You know, they show that to you. They model that,
mm-hmm.
in a sense. And I think you said something along the lines of, they let you not worry about, or I can't remember how you
said it. Yeah, they let me not, I don't have to worry about stuff when I'm with them.
Yeah, yeah.
About anything.
Right, right. And the thing that's over time that I imagine you'll find is you can bring that same not worry into a relationship with anyone.
Uh-huh. Right.
Even if they're not someone who's practicing or whatever it is.
Right, right, right. Because I don't have to get caught up in their conditioning.
Yes.
Or mine.
Or yours, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Right. The conditioning that arises, which, of course, could only be projection, because we can't ever know what's happening for the other person.
Right.
But in seeing that, that just becomes what you're seeing.
Right.
That just becomes what you're aware of.
Right.
Now, of course, what conditioning would want to do is to say, okay, I see how it is, so I should be able to be with anyone right now today and be happy no matter what.
Right.
Right. But, you know, instead to look at it, okay, I'm training, you know, using, say, a athletic metaphor. Uh-huh. I'm training. And so if I'm training at first, then I'm going to begin with what I can manage right now. You know, maybe I'll begin walking. Maybe I won't even run at first. And then after, you know, the muscles start to really build and I feel strong and it feels supportive to my body, then maybe I'll begin a little jogging. And then after the jogging feels strong and, you know, the muscles have acclimated to that, then I might begin going longer distances.
Mm-hmm.
So at first, to surround yourself with people who are modeling being in the moment for you seems mm-hmm. really wise, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then as time goes on, to find that's not something that then you have to only do. I only can be with people who are in the moment, but instead you can kind of expand the experience to, well, can I bring being in the moment for myself into any relationship, into
right.
being with anyone?
Right, right, and it takes time to do that.
And it takes time to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the biggest thing, of course, as always, is can we be kind to ourselves in the process of learning that?
Right, right. Oh, thank you. That's really helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big topic.
Yeah.
There's a lot to see in it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Take
All
care.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Kristen. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have a special guest, Jen Colmore, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Jen, I also appreciated that athletic metaphor. Is really, I've heard it before, and it was really great to hear it again.
Yep. I use it all the time, so it must mean a lot to me.
yeah, really. And that really, what I hear in that also is the no standards about how I'm doing, you know, according to someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that the training is the project in itself. That is the thing.
Yes.
You know, it really is. You know, maybe the marathon is the fun kind of goal that I get to work towards. But that the training is really, that's the whole point. That's the whole joy. That's the whole pleasure of doing it.
Yes. Yes. You know, it really reminds me of one of the recent In Our Practice newsletters.
Mm-hmm.
And the topic was practice successes.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if it was every single article, but most of them were, I'm practicing, and that's the success.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so, you know, it's so nice to hear from people like Sandy who call in and talk about the amazing side benefits of awareness practice and how life really does start to work, and, you know, it feels like the content of our lives goes, you know, in a nice direction. And, you know, sometimes the successes feel even bigger when things are really, really hard and we keep at it.
Yes.
We keep practicing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it reminds me, you know, I practice in good times, I practice in bad times. I practice. It's what I do.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, practice is who I am.
Yes.
Yeah, so that in the really, really hard times, practice is there for me.
Yes.
You know, because it isn't at first. When we first start practicing, it's very challenging to practice in the hard times. You know, someone's dying or, you know, I've just been diagnosed with something or, you know, I'm in a job that's just awful, or some circumstance that's very, very difficult. when we're first practicing, it feels impossible to bring practice into those times.
Yes.
So we often encourage people, you know, really practice with the what feels like the little stuff. And then what we find eventually is that that, in a sense, becomes the habit. That becomes the default, is to practice with whatever comes up for us in our lives.
Yes. Yes. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Jen, we have another caller.
Okay, great.
I'd like to welcome Diane from California. You're on Open Air.
Hi, Jen.
Hi, Diane.
Well, I'm just calling with some raw emotion, which is some depression and despair. It's you know, I've read the book on depression. I've listened, so I'm just calling right in the moment, asking
for
support about that.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what it is I've been working really hard to get there's a lot of environmental things, like my job is, I'm a teacher in California, my job's at risk right now. Relationship ended. There's some things like that, but I'm just calling for a reminder of in the moment when you're really depressed, and I feel a lot of pressure because there's, I called a couple weeks ago, but I've been trying to, for many years, have a child and keep ending up at the point where I'm about ready to try and I'm on my own, and then it's something I've wanted for a long time, but I find myself feeling really depressed, and I don't think that's the right time to bring a child in, but it's, you know, so I get into this cycle of here
mm-hmm.
I am. I've taken care of a lot of the other logistics, but now
mm-hmm.
my mood is getting in the way, and I've asked this question for years about if it's my conditioning that just doesn't want me to have that, or if it's, just what is.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you said you were calling in the moment to get a reminder that...
A reminder of whatever practice looks like when you're feeling like all, you know, you just can't move with the depression.
Yeah. It really is back to, I don't know if you were hearing Michael and I talk just before you called in, but it's back to that, isn't it? That place of, you know, it's not easy necessarily, but it's all well and good to practice when, you know, life is more or less going my way. You know, more or less I have what I need, I pretty much have what I want, and, you know, that doesn't stop the voices from on a day-to-day basis kind of nagging and, you know, being dissatisfied. But so there's practice there, and then there's practice where it feels like where you describe, where on the content level maybe things are really hard, and on an emotional level things are very, very hard.
Right. So, yeah. And, I feel like, well, I know how I could practice if it was just this feeling, but I feel also this pressure to be somewhere that I'm not right now.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I feel like I can't even remember right now what does it look like to practice when you're really depressed. I guess, you know, it's some compassion, I guess.
And what would you say, Diane, what has it looked like to practice in recent days for you?
I've been writing. I've been doing this thing where I write, and I have two columns, and one column is the sort of conditioned voices that are just really in pain or angry or mean.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other column I put, you know, I start writing kind of what the little bit of the mentor voice that I can get.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it comes out with, lines and lines on the left side of so that's one practice. I've been just trying to separate out the voices.
Mm-hmm. And how's that been?
It helps.
Mm-hmm.
It helps.
Mm-hmm.
It helps, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so, like, just now what was happening, I was at a staff meeting, and I think I get this feeling of I can't endure this misery anymore,
uh-huh.
you know.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so the staff meeting was sort of abominable, and then I don't really have a job lined up for next year, which scares me. Uh-huh. And then I was driving home, and then I felt so lonely, and then I was like, and here I am. I'm supposed to be excited that I'm going to try and get pregnant, but I'm not at all happy or excited, and yet that's something I've been attached to for so long, so do I let go of that?
Yeah.
You know, and it did occur to me a little while ago to say, for 24 hours, let yourself off the hook.
Yeah. Oh, amen.
For 24 hours, like, let's say,
yeah.
You're just not up to having this baby, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. You're not up to trying to have a baby, and you're letting yourself off the hook for 24 hours, because I think that's some of what makes me just feel this pressure.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even for 24 hours, just let go of the conversation altogether. You know, it doesn't even need to be a conclusion of you're not ready to have this baby. You know, it could even just be a vacation from the conversation.
Yeah. I guess that's, you know, I hang out a lot in anxiety about decisions, so I was almost sort of trying to take that off. But just for 24 hours, yeah, like what would I do if I wasn't depressed right now? You know, I'd go for a walk, and
yeah.
I'm picking up my goddaughter at 7:30, you know, and...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, essentially what you're talking about is bringing the mentor in. Because, you know, to go, I mean, your goddaughter probably is a perfect, you know, thing for you to look at. Because what would you want for her? You know, if she were in, she's just having a really hard time. Kind of everything from every direction for whatever reason is happening all at once.
Right.
And meanwhile, she feels like she needs to make this big life decision. You know, what would you want for her?
I'd want to hold her, you know?
Yeah.
I just want to hold her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's the first step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Holding her, you know, literally and metaphorically. And that's perfect, because I would project that 24 hours is exactly what you're talking about. That's a holding. That's a holding a space for her, you know, holding a space for you to not be under that pressure at a time when that's the last thing you need.
Right. Yeah, I've had myself under that pressure for about 10 years.
Yeah. You know, and the truth of it, this goes back to when we were talking to Christina, the very first caller, is that, you know, no clarity will ever come from that conversation, which is not the same as no clarity will ever come. But so to take a vacation from the kind of that making the decision process seems very wise, because it could end up being a permanent vacation.
Where does clarity come from if it's not from that conversation?
Yeah.
Oh, you're not going to tell me.
Well, because I project you already know. That, you know, in glimpses here and there in our lives, we see that for ourselves. And then it feels really scary, because it's not what we're used to. It's not, you know, kind of comfortable and usual. We're used to thinking, no, I've got to be up here in my head in this conversation. That's how I'm going to make good life decisions.
Uh-huh.
That's how I'm going to figure things out. That's how I'm going to feel better. You know, we actually believe that's how I'm going to feel better, is to go up into my head and think myself through all of this. But if we look to our experience, that's never the case.
Yeah, and I just have such an absolute lack of trust of myself knowing. I mean, I think I remember since I was fairly young, you know, maybe high school, or out of high school, and people saying, well, you really do know. And I just felt like it was, I just felt like, how dare you tell me I know, and I don't feel like I know at all.
Yeah.
And I think some of it is I can't bear to know, you know, like if I look at my experience, I can hardly say, you know, I don't want to know what seems to be true for me right now.
Hmm. Hmm. Because it feels...
Well, I think what feels true to me right now is I don't feel like I can do this alone.
Uh-huh.
And that means letting go of something I've really wanted.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so kind of any way it ends up, there are parts of you who are really going to need to be held. no matter what it is. And, I mean, that's really the enormous gift of awareness practice, is over time we learn that we are that person who can hold us.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for at least, for helping me get to the holding part.
Yeah, well, and practice with your goddaughter.
Yeah, definitely. She's really good at it.
Yeah, and, you know that everything you're familiar with the concept of projection, yeah?
Yes.
So everything you feel moved to offer her and want for her, and those are all the same things that you want for Diane, too. You know, all the same things you can offer to yourself.
Yeah, is there some point, it's like I'm really, really good at doing it for other people, and I just don't believe that I can do it for myself. You know, I was coming home from work, and I just was like, who will help me figure this out?
Yeah, and we don't. We're conditioned not, you know, ourselves. We're the last person to be worth the compassion we have to offer. It's true. It's not true that we're not worth it, but it's true that we're conditioned to think we're not worth it. And so that's why, you know, we were just talking about the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat. We hit people over the head with that during those retreats. To, you know, it's not cheating to look at your own children. It's not cheating to look at your pets. It's not cheating to look to your goddaughter for that, to have the experience of that unconditional love. And then all we do is we just, little by little, we practice bringing that back here to this person. And we watch the resistance that arises to that. But we practice it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear the music. But I think it's that I think I deserve it, but I don't think I'm capable of giving it to myself.
But you are. Yep, you'll prove that to yourself.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Diane.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us, Diane. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we've had a special guest, Jen Colmore, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Jen, I found that very moving, the last call.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks for being here tonight with us. It's a great privilege for me.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure as always. I guess we'll have to talk about Africa next time.
We will do that.
But there's an update coming out by email, just minutes away, probably tomorrow or the next day. So if you're not on our mailing list, hop on the website and get on our mailing list for all the latest news.
Sounds great.
Yep.
Thank you, Jen.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Good night.
Good night.